Dwight Morrow once wrote to his son, and this is what he said, I quote, "The world is divided into people who do things and people who get the credit. Try, if you can, to belong to the first class. There is far less competition." Denny?
Didn't Doss often say, "Think and you'll have so little competition"?
I don't know. It's very possible. Do you remember Betty?
Maybe it just occurred to him one day.
Maybe he read it in an IBM magazine. Yes. They said that I was supposed to repeat your questions and speak distinctly and into the microphone. Yes, with great vigor. How many of you worked on the weekly schedule and mapped out for yourself a normal schedule using both the objectives which you listed yesterday as well as a do list, or just adding into this weekly schedule the normal type of activity in which you are engaged in a normal week back in your area? How many of you completed a schedule? At least two of us. Two of you, I mean.
I mapped out this week.
This week?
I'm very smart. Sorry.
Did anyone else do this week instead? Well, let's take a few minutes. And, this wasn't primarily intended as an assignment anyway. I felt that we would do most of our work on these things right here in the classroom. So let's fill out a schedule. Use the objectives that you developed yesterday. Add into this items that you would normally transfer, say, from a do list. Also incorporate into this the normal activities for which you are responsible in a normal situation wherever you wherever your work might be or your area. And let's spend just a few minutes on this, and then let's discuss it, because in the process of filling it out, you probably will have some questions on what type of things can be added and what can be best eliminated. The problem often with developing a schedule of this kind is that it gets too crowded and too rigid. Yes.
Can I ask a question?
Yes.
Is one approach to this to put down, first of all, the things that would be part of your normal schedule each week? In other words, fill in those blocks first?
The question was, which blocks do you fill in first, that which is a normal part of your schedule each week? And I think the answer to that would be yes. I would just start in and fill in everything you can think of throughout the week that you know you do or you know that you have commitments for, and then take from your list of objectives other aspects that you think should be added, and add those, plus a few items that you normally have to do during the week just to get them scheduled in. Betty?
You said you work from a do list. You mean this is kind of a permanent do list?
Yes, I work from a do list, a notebook page or pages and a do list. And most of us carry these little notebooks with us, and this provides a wonderful source for jotting down the moment something comes to mind that we know we ought to do, to jot it down on a page in our notebook, or if you're working at a desk, get it on a sheet of paper if you use a sheet like this as a do list. I use an 8.5 by 11 sheet of paper, which I simply keep in a desk drawer, and it has about four main divisions: phone calls to make, letters to write, people to see, projects to work on. And I transfer from my notebook to the do list so that I have one central location for a do list. Now, you might wish to keep your do list in your notebook, but somewhere you need to have a method of recording those particularly incidental items that are so easily forgotten, and those need to be written down. Then when you plan your schedule for the week, you insert from the do list those things which you need to get done and the day you want to do them. It might be correspondence, it might be personal correspondence, it might be business correspondence, but you can insert into your plan a block of time for that particular job or assignment. Don't spend a lot of time thinking about it. Just start jotting things down as you see it. If you usually have two or three luncheon appointments during the week, then just put luncheon appointment. And if you have two or three things every week that you usually do in the evening, just generalize on those. And work on filling it out, and we'll spend maybe another 5 minutes on it, and then we'll discuss it. All right. Let's discuss this. First of all, you'll find that 30 minutes or more is normally required to think your week through and to develop the initial aspects of your planning for the following period of 1 week. You can easily spend 30 minutes on this. Now, we've only spent 5 minutes or even less, and we've also done it in a semi-fictitious manner, because you are not in your area, and you're not aware of appointments next week and other responsibilities and obligations that you would be much more conscious of if you were sitting at your desk in your particular home or office or area. So if you don't have many things listed, why, don't let that be a factor in your evaluation of how this can be effective, because you have to invest time in planning. And this is often the mistake that people make. They don't feel they have enough time to take the time to plan, and they just sort of keep plodding away doing the things that that are creating the most pressure on them at the moment. Instead of getting more done at the end of any given period, whether it's a week or a month, they end up getting less done, and they end up not getting the things done that should have been done. And if you will take time to plan at the beginning of a week, you'll find that it's exciting and it pays tremendous dividends. And don't be discouraged if you don't feel that you've gotten enough items on your plan. That's not the issue. The basic issue is to take projects or responsibilities or things that need to be done and schedule a particular time to work on those. This is the significant thing, that you have taken from your list of responsibilities or objectives, and you have said, at 10 o'clock on Tuesday morning, from 10 to 12, I am going to work on this project. Maybe you have a conference coming up, a weekend or a one-day conference, or a speaking engagement. You can schedule blocks of time for preparation. And I have done this repeatedly. And I find that though I don't always follow the plan, yet I get started on message preparation sometimes several weeks in advance of a time that I have to bring perhaps a new subject, and I want lots of time for study and thought on that subject. Well, weeks before, if I know that far in advance, I'll schedule a block of time just to get started and to plow into it. And the important thing in this kind of planning is that you actually set aside time for projects that you sort of dread and you don't look forward to, but nevertheless, when that time comes around, you often get to that. You don't always, but you often do. And the decision to work on that project has already been made. And the psychological factor of this is very significant. Because we keep postponing what we don't want to do. But if in a planning period you decide on Tuesday, I'm going to work on so-and-so, you sneak up on yourself. You don't dread identifying a particular time to work on a project when it's 2 or 3 days away or a week away. You don't dread it then. And you'll schedule it. But when it comes right down to deciding, well, I think I'll work on so-and-so today, the whole day goes by and we don't do it. But if it's actually scheduled for a period of time, you'll be surprised that you can move right in to that project without this emotional barrier or block that you otherwise face. And psychologically, it's a tremendous factor. So the important thing is to take these primary responsibilities and schedule them for a particular time. This is perhaps one of the most effective ways of scheduling a half a day with the Lord, or a day with the Lord, or 4 or 5 hours, whatever it might be. So often we say, well, this week I'm going to get a day with the Lord, and the week passes and we don't get it. We keep waiting for the perfect day, when there's no pressure, and no responsibilities, and no appointments, and that day doesn't come. But if we say, Wednesday, at noon, I'm leaving the home or the office, and the rest of the afternoon is given to the Lord, and this is all set up, somehow psychologically, you're all prepared for this, all day Monday and Tuesday and Wednesday morning, everything seems to get done that has to be done, and you get your half day. And it's because you plan it in advance. From the company of the committed, in the chapter, The Call to Enlistment, a good paragraph on the importance of this. One rare but powerful item of discipline is the requirement that the recruit of the company, or, you know, the, say it might be anybody who's in a associated with a group of committed Christians. That's what he's referring to here. The requirement that the recruit of the company undertake a personal experience of solitude once a month. This is a day alone with the Lord. This is patterned consciously on the experience of Christ who periodically went alone, even at the price of temporary separation from the needs of his fellows. The justification of aloneness is not that of refined self-indulgence, but rather a consequent enrichment of one's subsequent contribution. A person who is always available is not worth enough when he is available. Everyone engaged in public life will realize the extreme difficulty of getting away each month for a period of 5 or 6 hours. But the difficulty is not a good reason for rejecting the discipline. It is the men and women who find it hardest to get away who need the redemptive solitude most sorely. They need to be where they are free from the compulsion of chit-chat, from the slavery of the telephone, and even from the newspaper. A Christianity which understands itself will make ample provision for retreat houses in which such solitude is expected and protected. But this is the kind of thing that that is a great help in getting these half days or days alone with the Lord, to plan them in advance. Now, what are some other things which you find in your planning can be accomplished in the context of a plan where generally they get neglected otherwise? Yes.
On this planning a week, do you preliminary plan a month first and then being more specific, what week?
The question was, do we plan a month in advance on a general basis and then plan a week on a more specific basis? And the answer to this would be, this is an optional decision. Some people do this. And I think that it depends a lot on the type of responsibilities and activity in which a person is engaged. I don't try to plan a month in advance, except as projects which I'm working on need to be started this month in order to be completed 2 months or 3 months later. But I'm going to go into some detail on that a little bit later. And then, of course, there is the important aspect of scheduling things to which you are committed or involved in over a period of months. You know sometimes in advance things that you will have to do. Well, that's not so much planning as just making notation of the schedule. Does that answer the question? George?
This would perhaps happen if you have a one of these success diaries with monthly pages in it, and you would jot things down to the coming ahead.
Sure. That's right. You'd jot these things down in advance and just keep them in writing so that you don't forget them, and put them, of course, in some place where you'll come across them, be reminded of them. What are some other things that you schedule and you find beneficial?
I find that in the summertime, when there are a number of people in the kitchen, that if my responsibility is to spend time with these fellows, that I'll have to schedule it or it won't happen. Last summer, I scheduled my time with them very detailed. This summer, I do the same, but on top of that, I keep my door open so that if a fellow wants to come in and chat for a couple of 3 minutes or 10 minutes, why, he can. I schedule as well as try to take up the problem immediately or at a time if he has something he wants to talk about. And I find that I make more a better use of my time this way.
This is, in fact, a principle. And if you want to jot it down for your notes, you can consider it as an actual principle, that you're much more effective by making definite appointments. It's much more effective, better use of time, to have a man come around at 2 o'clock rather than say, we'll drop by sometime this afternoon. When it's sometime this afternoon, you find that other things come along that you want to do, you want to become involved in them, but you can't plan any block of time because sometime in the afternoon you know you have to be available. And it's much better to schedule definite appointments for both people and things you want to do. George?
I think that those of us involved in family situations need to schedule definitely times with our family. Otherwise, as we said yesterday, these can get by us. A whole week can go by and we haven't had any time with them.
Excellent. Do you have any questions regarding working with a schedule like this? All right. The material we've covered thus far, yesterday and today, are the essential aspects which, at least for me, are the most effective, which I've found to help me in my planning and in getting things done. And just for the sake of review, one of the greatest dangers is to schedule yourself so rigidly that there is a legalistic air or association with this plan, and instead of being a stimulant to you, it has a deadening effect. So if you find your plan, the plan you're trying to use, has a discouraging effect on you, then reevaluate the plan and loosen it up somewhere, or look for some other kind of method that can help you in developing ways and means of using your time more effectively. But you'll find as you pursue a plan that if you actually have a plan, though you don't always get to the items assigned, you don't always get to them, nevertheless you'll find at the end of a day or a week, you have in fact accomplished things that without the plan had been hanging around for weeks and left undone. And through the use of a plan, you find that you've done them, and it's often surprising how easily it has worked out. Denny?
Rod, do you then fill in things that you actually do during the week on the same sheet? And it becomes sort of...
You mean as the week progresses, do I add to it? Is this the question?
Not that as much as, say you... At the beginning of the week, you fill it in, there's a lot of loose blocks.
Mm-hmm.
Then as the week begins to unfold, do you record what you do in this time?
No, I don't add those items which I become involved in as the week progresses. But you'll find that as your week does progress, items constantly come up that need to be added for later in the day or the next day or later in the week. And you work with this all the time. You're taking it out and adding, at least in my circumstance, I add to it all week long. And what you have mentioned, incidentally, is an important experiment for anybody who has never done it, and often is a very refreshing thing for those of us who did it maybe many, many months ago, but haven't done it recently, and that is to actually record how you use your time during a particular 12 or say a waking a day, from the time you get up until you go to bed at night, record every 30 minutes what you've just done. And it's startling. It's startling to discover how little you have to add sometimes to 30-minute periods of time. And it makes you very, very time conscious. If you've never done this, take yourself a sheet of paper and rule out on it a whole day in blocks of time. If you want to do it in blocks of 15 minutes or 30 minutes, you can. Doesn't matter. But at the conclusion of those periods of time, as much as possible, don't wait till the end of the day or till noontime, but as much as possible at the end of each block of time, add into that block, just list what you did during that period of time. And it certainly stimulates your conscious use of what you're getting done and what you're not getting done. Because it's embarrassing.
What do you do to pick your spirits up after you look at the page?
Well, I don't know, George. It's very stimulating. It's discouraging, but also stimulating. It stimulates you to realize... that you can do a lot more.
I've wondered, Rod, something a little bit lighter than that, as a way of a record or a log. For instance, at the end of the school year, I wondered how many trips I made to A&M and how many trips Gibbs made to Dallas. And I wished I would have kept record on that, and so I could have averaged it out. And this would be one way of knowing that, wouldn't it?
Yes, it is. It's one way. Yes, you can do that. You can add to that. And you can do this with your success diary. I have done that, listed in my success diary all my activities and saved them. And it's been an interesting way to reflect back on activity and what you did and where you went. And then another thing which some people do is to keep a daily journal at the end of the day. Just jot down where you went, what you did, who you saw, and sometimes significant events, things that happened which illustrate a principle or something you learned. But it's a very valuable record.
Well, two questions. What time of the week do you plan your schedule?
I usually do my planning prior to Monday. Sometimes I can't get to it or don't get to it till a Monday, and then it has to be done Monday morning. But the best time to plan it is on a Saturday or Sunday. For me, now, your best planning time may be some other day. Maybe Sunday is your busiest day. Well, then that would not be a good time to plan.
And the other one, do you keep or do you file these sheets for later reference?
No, I do not. It depends upon the kind of information you're keeping on the sheet. If Denny plans to use it as a record of his events, then I'm sure he would file it. I have kept a record, for I've kept them for a period of time and reviewed them to analyze and study them, but I don't at the present time keep them. Betty?
You're scheduling loosely on the week. Supposedly Monday and Tuesday, the things that you had planned, you could call on and do something else. Do you grab them in the Thursday or Friday?
Now, the question was, if the things you plan for Monday and Tuesday don't get done, can you move them back or crowd them into Thursday and Friday? And the answer is yes. If there are projects or assignments that you can't get to, and they were, say, scheduled for Tuesday, you can move them back into the week later on. But I wouldn't say that you should crowd them. If Thursday is crowded, then don't overload your schedule, but maybe transfer if the Tuesday item had a higher priority than something already scheduled for Thursday, then move Tuesday's item into Thursday and Thursday's item into the next week. But you do reschedule the things that you don't get to, and you don't worry about them. They don't bother you. There are three or four principles to work by, which might be of help to you in your planning and just in your general approach to getting things done. Yes? Yes. Jack, would you open the door? We'll get a little ventilation. This proposal of analyzing your use of time is a principle to work by, in fact, if you want to use it as such. But this is a very valuable thing. Some helpful tools in being well organized is the notebook, and you have this, of course, a do list, or however you want to keep it. But something that you have with you at all times on which you make notes of things you need to do. Ideas that come to mind, solutions to problems, things you want to ask other people to do. All of these things should be jotted down immediately, the moment they come to mind. And you can develop this into a habit so that you do it automatically, and it's a tremendous asset. Especially if you have lots of things to do. And another important tool is some kind of a plan for a period of time. And what I'm referring to here is this weekly chart which you've been working with. You may want to design something else, or you may want to develop something that provides a plan for a two-week period or a month. But you need some kind of a tool that's a planning tool, and you use that to plan in advance. Whether it's a week or not is incidental, but you need some kind of a planning tool, a schedule. A third thing that is of great value, or can be depending on your activities and responsibilities, is a set of 12 file folders, and these are identified as by month, January through December. And into these file folders, you drop reminders to yourself on items that you want to check up on, or projects that need to be begun. And this is a very simple but efficient method of reminding yourself of things that need to be done. And if you try to get them all in your notebook, sometimes it's too confusing. And you need some way to file things that need to be checked up on. And you can write yourself little notes and drop them in these folders, and if you'll just check the folder, that's the secret, of course. It's a great help. Then another tool which can be of great help for you is a simple file of manila folders that provide for you a base, sort of a basic outline or list of your major responsibilities and projects that you are working on.
Could you explain that a little more in detail?
Well, most of us have major responsibilities, things that we are primarily responsible for. And there needs to be some kind of organization so that we stay current and we are developing these areas of responsibility. There's a certain amount of paper and other material perhaps that ought to be filed in some kind of a file that you can keep these in. And I found personally that having a folder on each major responsibility or project that I'm working on and having it at my fingertips is a great time saver. And in my desk drawer, I have a set of these manila folders, but the other kind of folders that hang suspended on a metal bar. And they have a tab system, and you can put this tab in any one of five or six different positions, and you can use different colors with it. And if you'll use one of these for each major responsibility, you'll find that it's a tremendous help to you in getting your work done. For instance, you may be responsible for planning conferences. So you have a folder or maybe three or four folders on this responsibility. And in it, you have a record of all your past and a record of what you're doing currently in planning local conferences. That's a major area of responsibility. If you have an area home, you may have a set of file folders on the maintenance of the house. And you may have a file folder on budgets and different aspects that you work with all the time. And if you'll have a system for filing information on those major responsibilities that's at your fingertips, and up to date, it's a tremendous time saver. You don't have to run all over the house looking for old bills or things that you've been working on a couple months ago, because you have a place for them, and when you're through with them, you or your wife or your secretary or your assistant or something knows where they go, and they get in the habit of putting them there, you get in the habit of putting them there, and you have the kind of information that you need and the past records available all the time. Here's a five-point plan, five-point outline for approaching a project or an assignment. Let's say it is an area conference. The first thing you do is to think this project through on paper. You organize it. You imagine each step of this project.
This point two.
No, this is a further explanation of point one. You imagine each step that is involved in the completion of this project, starting with the beginning and going right on through the end. And you imagine yourself going through this. And you organize and put on paper all of the responsibilities involved in that project. Then the second thing you do is to schedule this project on a time plan. Is that clear, or would you like an illustration?
Could you explain it further, please?
Let's say that we are planning an area conference, and the date is September the 30th. Then we think in terms of the people who are to receive, well, the first thing you really think of is where you're going to have it. And so you have to locate your conference grounds, and locating conference grounds is a difficult problem. So you list that as one of the first things you do, and that's part of your scheduled plan, time plan, to locate the place. Then if the conference is on the 30th, you want your people to have their invitations, say, on the 15th of September. So you jot that down. You want your conferees to receive their invitations on the 15th. Then you go back further and you say, well, if they're to get it on the 15th, when do I mail it? Well, then I mail it on the 10th. Then you jot this down. This is part of your time plan, to mail your invitations on the 10th. Then you go back further and you say, well, if it's to be mailed on the 10th, it has to be printed by, say, the 5th. So you set a deadline for having them printed. You set a deadline for having your copy to your printer. You set a deadline for when you begin writing the copy. And then you get your letter done.
And allow 30 days for the printer.
Allow 30 days for the printer to get the printing done?
Minimum. Ahead of the schedule.
You don't have problems like that, do you, Cecil? So you start writing your letter about July 1st, is that right?
Have it off the press July 1st.
But that's what I mean by a time plan. You schedule the project according to units of breakdown and time allowed for the completion of each unit. The third aspect of the detailing the assignment is to make a do list. You practically have a do list now, except that there are other do list items, more details than what you have in your time plan. And you just list all that you can think of. You write out a do list of everything that you can think of that needs to be done. Eventually you get this into broad categories so that certain aspects of it fall into natural periods of time. The fourth step is to start immediately and fight delays. And this is an important aspect of getting the job done on time, to get started immediately. Often, when we feel we have lots of time for a project, we don't get started on it. We forget about it for a few days, and then we're behind schedule. So we need to get started even before we think we ought to. And I noticed last night in the office, Leroy was already working on a project for which he'd received an assignment yesterday afternoon between 4:30 and 6. And he had three fellows over there in the office, and they were already working on a paper that he has to produce for the training policy conference. And I thought, boy, that's really getting a fast start. But it's important. And then, if you are responsible for a project, whether it's the development of a brochure or a meeting or a conference, and you assign responsibilities to other people, you will find that they come to you with reasons why something cannot be done. Now it's your responsibility to solve those problems and to demonstrate that it can be done on schedule. And this happens repeatedly in my work. People come and say, well, we can't do this because of so-and-so. And to me, it's just a refreshing challenge for someone to say, well, we can't do it because of so-and-so. Because there is a way to do it. There is always a way. And sometimes you may encounter a delay or a detour in something you're doing, but 9 times out of 10, there is a solution to the problem that the people have brought to you. And that's why this expression is in here, fight delays, or avoid detours, however you want to express it. But the only way you'll get a job done and done on time is to take aggressive action against the detours and the delays that people bring to your attention. There's always a solution. If you have the energy and the desire to find it, you'll find it. The fifth point, and the final one, is to, of course, have a deadline for the completion of the project. Jim?
That's this type of a problem, in other words, if we had a project that was a conference or something that might be repeated a number of times, maybe we'd have an extra point to establish an SOP for this type of operation if that's possible.
Yes, your SOP would actually be in this file setup that you have, because there you have a record of what you did and when you did it and who did it, and you have a list of all your due list items. And this is one of the advantages of having a permanent set of files, that you can record these things. And this is applicable. There are lots of people who, lots of families, for instance, who have a list of items that they take when they go on a picnic. And when they go on a picnic, they just go get this list, and they dig out all they want, and when they find they've forgotten something on a picnic, they add another item or two. And this is the way they operate. And for them, to go on a picnic is a very simple thing, but for some families, it's cataclysmic.
When I was in Europe, I was doing a lot of traveling, I had a list of things to pack that I just kept in my success diary. And every time I got ready to pack, I just flipped it open to that page and started down the list. And it really reduced my packing time.
Yes, it not only reduces your packing time, but it gives you a psychological boost to that, because you don't have to stop and think, now let's see, shoes, socks, pants, shorts, shirts, neckties, coats, tie glass. That, you have to do that if you don't have a list, don't you? And you've got to go through the mental plan. If you have a list, you check it off and it's done.
You've got the adapter cord for the electric razor.
Yeah. George?
Could you make a statement on the value or percentage of time that should be invested in planning along the lines of what you were talking about before, your principles to work by, such as setting up file folders and setting up your organization so that you do have it ready to use in workable condition?
I don't know that I completely understand your question.
Was it worth the time, any amount of time that it would take to get it accomplished?
Okay, the question is it worth any amount of time that it would take to accomplish the setting up of the file folders and the other tools and the plans that are used in planning? And the answer to this, according to any article or people that I have read on the subject of planning, is that it pays great dividends. And it's worth whatever amount of time you invest in it. Jack?
I asked Lauren one time how much time he spent in just thinking and planning. And he told me, and I was quite amazed. And then I said, well, how much time do you think an area director should spend in just thinking and planning for the work that needs to be carried out in the area? And he thought about it a minute, and he said, well, I don't see how I could get by with any less than one day a week.
And he says that to you?
He said
he didn't see how you could get by on less than one day a week.
And I just about fell off my chair. And I said, now, wait a minute, you don't mean one day a week, just thinking and planning and praying over it. And he says, yeah, one day a week.
Well, this, of course, is one of Sandy's strong points. He does plan his schedule, and he spends a lot of time in planning and in thinking and in praying. Denny?
I was talking to an executive several corporations in Dallas recently, and I was asking him about pressures and anxieties concerning the normal duties that a person has to do. He says, I'm through with that. He said, I used to sweat pressure. But he says, I've discovered that pressure just comes from not thinking ahead and not planning ahead.
I think this statement is probably as accurate without qualification as it could be. I think this is really a significant factor. Planning ahead. To me personally, I call it staying on top of my job. And if I can work far enough ahead, I keep the pressure off. And if I can plan ahead and work on projects so that they get done on time and there's no pressure in getting them done, it tremendously relieves the pressure. I've never heard that stated just that way, but I certainly think I would agree with the man. Here's another principle. I'm not going to take long on it, just to mention it. Doing one thing at a time. Do one thing at a time. Concentrate on one thing and avoid the interruptions, or avoid starting something, laying it down, starting again, laying it aside, starting again. This kind of activity is very time-consuming, and you don't get much done. Bernard Baruch says, and I quote, "I find my greatest time saver is to do one thing at a time and stick to it until it's finished. I've never been able to do two things at once. Some people can, and very well. But it takes mental discipline not to leave a job half done. But in my opinion, if you learn to finish, you will use time and energy to the best advantage." Eisenhower, another strong believer in one thing at a time, recently told his writer, Bob Considine, "The only way I can keep up with this job is to take one thing at a time and not let the rest of the job intrude." And this is a very important principle to work by. And it's important to set aside a block of time for something that's a big project or that requires a lot of thought and preparation. And if you can set aside an hour or two for a project like that and go through that period of time uninterrupted, you'll be amazed at how much you get done. Now, in contrast to this, we have to remember the principle that this man Parkington articulated. You know, Parkington's law, and he says that work expands to fill the time allotted for it. So we can make the mistake of allotting too much time for a particular job. Work expands to fill the time allotted for it. Any questions now on this material that we've covered on management of time, getting a job done, and so on?
Rod?
Yes.
If you have allotted a time for a particular project, and in the middle of it, you're interrupted for another block of time, then do you use the principle of rescheduling that?
Yes, usually, if the job isn't finished. I reschedule it if it isn't finished.
You do your Bible study then? I take it in one block of time?
No, not a whole Bible study. But I can assign, say, an hour for Bible study several times during the week, or however I want to do it. But I don't necessarily try to do it all in one block of time. But if you don't get more than, say, 15-minute intervals on it, well, you just don't get anywhere. You have to have enough time on a given project to make considerable progress on that project. Now, here he has said he completes them. Well, I think this is relative. I think what he's really talking about is enough interrupted time on some particular project to make significant progress with it.
How about people who comes and interrupt you, has no appointment?
This is a difficult area to manage. If you have too many interruptions, then you have to take yourself to a location where you're not available to that kind of interruption. If this is possible, you have to remove yourself from the line of traffic.
Become a legend.
Yeah. Become a legend, he said, like the legend of Warren Myers.
Now, one thing I find helpful in creating a creative work is to interrupt what I'm doing. If I get a new assignment, for instance, and to use the momentum of the inspiration of the moment to use to work on that instead of what I had already planned to work on. I think it puts farther ahead in the long run, even though it changes your immediate plan, to substitute the new item for what I had already planned to work on, which is a little more stale.
Yes, I'm sure that's true. Sometimes you go stale anyway, even though you don't have a new assignment. And if you do find you're going stale on a subject, why try to find a solution to this? Lay it aside, purposely. Lay it aside and say, okay, I'm through with this. I'm not going to touch it for a week. And you can come back to it refreshed.
Question? Right, I find when I'm working on something that I don't particularly enjoy, they're the books. Bookkeeping. I'm no bookkeeper. And I get banging away and I have to do it for several hours on end. In the middle of it, all of a sudden I realize that I'm just sort of fit to climb the walls. And you get a lousy attitude about the whole thing. Now, do you have any suggestions?
A couple possibilities. I don't know whether they...
And I'm not just angry, but tense, actually, or nervous.
Well, what can you do that will relax you? Is there something you can do for a few minutes that will, in fact, relax you? Could you pick up a book and read it? Could you watch a 30-minute television western? Could you in some way reward yourself at a given period in the evening? For instance, if you plan that evening that you're going to do this bookkeeping, it's going to take 2 hours, so at the halfway point you reward yourself with a 30-minute Western or a bottle of Coke or something, you know, run around the block. Or this can be an incentive, and then you also can look for that in the project which will be rewarding. And instead of maintaining the Puritan attitude of doing this in spite of how you feel about it and so on, you look at it for what you can find in it that will be satisfying to you. For instance, let's say you have a letter to write and you dread writing the letter. Well, your mind can be occupied with all the problems and the dread of that letter. Or you can take the other point of view, or another point of view, and you can say, this is a tough letter, but I'm going to make it a masterpiece. And when I'm through with this letter, it's going to contribute to the problem, it's going to be a solution, I'm going to be proud of it, I'm going to like it. And I have done this with correspondence or letters of projects, and I find that if I take that positive attitude that I'm going to produce something good out of this problem, which is to me a problem, that my whole perspective will change. Maybe it's nothing more than just the satisfaction of getting that particular job up to date, such as bookkeeping. But there's a lot of satisfaction from that. Another possibility would be not to let so much of the bookkeeping accumulate, but to work at it for shorter periods more often. Okay, let's take a break, shall we? I intended that we have one yesterday, and
he has 8 primary objectives this too many.
The question was, do we think that 8 primary objectives are too many?
Or do you have primary objectives and then have subtopics under them? I noticed you said your job is one and you have several major jobs. Do you think of them as subtopics under a primary objective? Or?
Yes, I do think in terms of major responsibilities sometimes being listed under a broad general category or heading. As you illustrated, one broad objective which I have is my job performance. And then under that I have major responsibilities in that job. However, you'll find that principles that apply to job performance, such as good use of time or decision making, also apply to all those responsibilities, not to just one of them. And often the principles that make us effective in the use of our time and in getting a job done, any one of those principles will apply to many aspects of our life.
Well, then, just one more question. Then you would, under each of these, like your job, and then some major parts of it, and then you'd have procedures under each of the major parts?
Yes, I would have.
But now, if one major objective is personal growth and development, then would extra reading and exercise, would they be sub-parts of that, or would they be procedures?
Well, I don't know that I could say which I think. They could be either. For personal growth and development, basically, I have, in my mind, things that I'm going to work on. I concentrate heavily on a reading program. And I improve my reading speed. I take a class in speed reading, and I continue to work with those principles. Now, that's something that I don't have listed anywhere, but it's something I do. However, I do have a reading program as a primary objective under the broad category of personal growth. And then along with that, I have certain things which I read and do. Magazines I read, a schedule for one book a month is what I try to accomplish in the way of just extracurricular reading. And my reading program takes a magazine from one field and another magazine from another and a newspaper from another and so on. So that in my reading program I have a broad coverage of articles that I'm reading that relate to my job, that relate to my personal growth, that relate to my spiritual life, and that's the way I break it down, and I don't think of them necessarily as details or the procedures. They're just part of that, part of what I do. Does that answer the question?
Yes.
Ross?
Yes.
You mentioned several different types of reading. Do you take specific times to read specific magazines and so on?
Does that answer the question?
Yes.
Ross?
Yes.
You mentioned several different types of reading. Do you take specific times to read specific magazines and so on? Do you schedule this, or do you just take it out and get a break and relax?
The question was, do I schedule reading time? Sometimes I do. If I find that I am not getting reading done, then I will go through a period of maybe weeks when I schedule reading time. And this is, for me, important. Other than that, my reading is pretty well geared by the magazines and the other material that I read that comes to me for reading. I subscribe to three or four magazines, and some of them are weekly. Well, I've got to get the magazine on hand, read before the next one comes. So I have automatic built-in deadlines on much of what I read. So these are a stimulant. They are, in fact, a stimulant.
Well, then, for instance, on a particular magazine, do you have, you just read a little bit here and there, Jane, a little extra time? Or do you have a time step?
No, in most of my magazine reading, I do it when I can get to it between other things. Sometimes I'll read at lunch hour. Sometimes I'll read between 5:30 and 6. This is an excellent time for me to read because it's just before dinner, and usually I can be free of office responsibilities. I can sometimes stay in my office and just read for 30 minutes. And this is the way I get my reading done.
So you don't list the things that you're doing that you don't need to list in order to do that are sort of automatic?
No, if I'm already doing them and getting to them, then I don't try to list all those things. Some of them I list because I know that I could forget them. Others, which I seem to be getting done, I don't necessarily list.
Okay.
And here again, what it comes back to is experimenting and constantly working with ideas and suggestions on management and use of time, and boiling down for your own personal use those things which in fact help you the most.
Now, one other question I wanted to ask about that is, like in helping others, you said that some ideas are helpful for some and some for others, but you probably feel that setting objectives and listing procedures and setting a schedule are basic for everyone.
Yes, these are basic principles. And you have to know your objectives, and you definitely need a plan. You need some kind of a tool or a plan, if you want to call it a plan, for scheduling your time and listing the things that you will do and when you will do them. These are basic. Herb?
Have you ever encountered in suggesting this to someone resistance, and then you have to sell them on this need in their mind?
The question is, sometimes do you encounter resistance, and if so, do you sell them on this idea? Yes, you encounter resistance. Sometimes people are not open to the whole concept of planning and scheduling time. To them it's mechanical, does violence to something, or they resent it. And if this is the case, I don't usually try to persuade them. I feel that there is a more basic problem, or perhaps something in their background that has created this attitude. And unless you can get to that, you won't really have convinced them. Unless they feel a need for it. Here we go back to the principle that we discussed yesterday. One of the 8 principles for adult learning was that an adult needs to feel his need to learn something, or he won't learn it, won't apply it. And it's interesting that on subjects of this kind, the people who need them the least are often the people who pursue them. Not always, but often.
I just might mention that there, in the past, were 2 things that did the most. I had agreed on the need for this, but I had an emotional block to it. And 2 things that helped me the most were, 1, that not working at this was inconsistent with love, because it always inconvenienced other people. And another was that the God who keeps the universe going in order is able to make me an organized person because it's consistent with love, and he's able to do it. And it really overcame the emotional block against him.
I thought you were going to say he works on a time schedule too.
That's one of the biggest arguments, I think, is the fact that the God who created us and the universe is probably the most organized individual in the world, in the universe, without any doubt. And he never loses any time, he never wastes any time, he's always on schedule. And therefore, there's nothing unspiritual about being organized.
No, and I think we also realize, too, that in Christ's life, with the demands of thousands during his 3-year ministry because of his healing power and his message and so on, there's never any indication that he was frustrated with the tremendous demands that were made on him. And I'm sure that it was because he had his priorities well in mind, and he offended lots of people because of it. He stuck with primary principles.
Rod, something that really interested me, I took this trip with Leroy and Jack. We went to this McDonnell Aircraft factory. This Mr. McDonnell has 28,000 employees. He has this one building that has 4,000 engineers. And this man developed a success diary, I guess probably long before these others were even thought of, probably. And he developed them and produced them and distributed them to his executives because of time and scheduling their time and everything. This was very fascinating to me.
Yes.
Jim White was sharing with us.
Can you talk up a little? I think we're getting most of these.
Jim White shared with us that in D.C. he talked to Dr. Dick Howard, who Jim thought seemed to be one of the busiest men, and there are a lot of busy men in D.C. But Jim said the one thing that impressed him about it. several specific examples of this. And men who are organized seem to have time.
Okay, the comment was Dick Halverson in Washington, D.C. seems to have plenty of time for people, and yet he's also one of the busiest people in Washington, or at least it seems this way. Another person who is an extremely busy person, but who always gives the impression of having all the time in the world, is Mark Hatfield. Remember? Right? Doesn't he impress you that way?
Yeah.
Governor of Oregon. And he chats with everybody. I walked out of a state building in Oregon with him when he stopped and talked to the janitor who was cleaning the floors in the evening. And he visited with this person on a very intimate personal basis about their family and something, some person in their family. And here's a man who has tremendous responsibility, but he really gives the impression of having all the time in the world. And it's tremendous. We are not going to be introducing a new subject today. but I have something interesting here. This is, I sent copies of this to some of the area directors. Jack, I sent you one, and perhaps others of you have seen this. But it's a test of your... a judgment, your ability to discern fact from non-factual. And I had Carol, my secretary, type up copies of this little story, and here's what it is. This paragraph up here tells you of an incident or a story, just this paragraph here. And then down below, there are 11 statements about that story. And you have the option of identifying whether this statement is true or false or whether it is questionable. And if you will read the story and then answer the questions, and you can refer back to the story all you wish, and then would you please circle the correct answer, that it's true or it's false or it's questionable. And you'll find that this is very stimulating, because the tendency is to presume things that aren't necessarily true. So I'd like to pass this out for you just for the interest that it will be, and we might do another one tomorrow.
Will there be some?
Yeah, bring this tomorrow, and we will discuss it. We'll talk about the correct answer. Any questions?
Will we get to the subject tomorrow?
Tomorrow we probably will get to the subject of decision making. This is part of it. Yes, I did. I said to speak into the microphone and to repeat the questions. He was only... Well, we were trying to do this. I think that the microphone probably picked up a number of the comments which you made. I turned it in your direction, and I felt you were speaking loudly enough so that it picked up most of the comments. Okay, this concludes our class period. You want to lead us in a word of prayer, Willard?
Dear Heavenly Father, we do thank you for this class this morning, and for the help Ronnie has been and the different others who have contributed. Pray that we might profit by this time and really work on these things in our schedule, and that we might get much more done for your glory in Christ's name.